morning and welcome to the second cup of coffee with your hosts, Lax Worm and Coach Bear, bringing lacrosse legends right to your kitchen table. So let's just see what the boys have brewing.
All righty, another second cup of coffee. Bear, we've had a lot of second cups of coffee throughout the year here.
Well, I enjoy coffee and I enjoy lacrosse, so that's a good thing. I think we're winning.
Got a big weekend. This is big weekend, right, for lacrosse. You got the NCAA tournament. You've got PLL starting their training camp. And I know you love the topic, but I want to talk about sixes, too, because I'm just so confused about this whole thing. You with me?
I'm not confused.
I'm not confused
at all about it. There's no confusion with me about it at all.
All right. Maybe there's no confusion. I just figured I'd throw a little drama in there. We have our guest on the line, though, Bear. The one, the only, Evan Washburn. Evan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, guys. Great to be with you.
So, Evan, I got to say, Bear is going to go through your playing history because that Bear loves doing that. But I got to tell you a few stories. So, I remember when we used to sit in some hotel room, conference room kind of thing, and I'd be off in the corner doing MLL radio, and you'd be on TV. And I always said to myself, why am I not the guy in front of the TV? Why isn't Evan over here doing MLL radio? And my wife said, because you don't look like him.
Is that all? That's the only separator? Okay. Well, look, whatever gets us in the room, whatever gets us in the party in this business is important. And then it's all about sticking around. So I would agree. Not necessarily with what your wife said, but it's a subjective environment that we all live in, and that could be visual, auditory. You pick it. So whatever gets us there, man.
No, I'm excited. It's really kind of cool because, like I said, being in the same room doing those kinds of things, and then all of a sudden seeing you, covering Super Bowls and playoffs and all these big things on the NFL, and now hoops and all the that went quick for you, didn't it?
It did. I mean, look, as anyone will tell you in any field, I'm sure you guys have experienced this professionally, even if it happens quickly, it feels like you've slogged through a lot. And I did. I mean, when you look at my resume from when I started in this business, really, I mean, I graduated in 08. I had my first internship in 09. And then I think my first Super Bowl was 2015. So, that's super quick. But a lot happened in that time, and there was a lot of grinding that was required, to use a cliche term. So I acknowledge that I definitely have been able to make a rapid rise, but I don't ignore – I don't feel like I skipped any steps, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I think, it's one of those things you always hear, right? Because you are putting the time and effort in it. But from the layperson, I sit back here and I said, hey, look at this guy. He's on, I know this guy. It's kind of cool. I've met him. So, it's kind of I get it, right? You're grinding, you're working hard to get to that point. But for the outside, you're saying, wow, he moved up there pretty quick. But that's good for you, man. I'm excited for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and the thing I'll say too is that it requires people taking some chances on you, and for whatever reason, whether it's your wife's opinion of the way I look or people seeing stuff, but whether it was Chris Day, I mean, to use the connection that we all have, mm-hmm. and Dave Gross at Major League Lacrosse, I mean, they took a chance on me when I had zero business other than the fact that I played high Division I lacrosse. I had zero real TV experience. They took a chance early, and then there's specific people at CBS that took a chance early, and I worked to never let them down, and I did the most I could with those chances. So that's the other layer to this that I always think is important to acknowledge.
Evan, let's get to the real good stuff here. Do you really read my text during the Pittsburgh Steelers games when I'm furious or happy or sad? And you're doing so.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I do my best to stay engaged in what's happening in front of me because that's most important. But I have to look at my phone because I'm not searching Twitter to see if you know, somebody thinks I'm good at my job, but I will follow beat writers and, you know, because they have a different view of it. And sometimes they'll be saying something and we haven't acknowledged it in the broadcast, or I may be think, oh, that's an interesting angle that I can actually add context to. I'm always there to service the viewer. So I want to know what some of the discussion points are about our games. And so my phone's in my hand. So if I get a text from you, I've definitely seen it. I can't remember if I've responded during the actual four quarters, but I try to definitely get to it at some point.
I just figured I'm such a homer when it comes to that stuff. I'm like, gosh, I'm going to text Evan. That's what I'm going to do, because that's what Steeler fans do. They think that I got a guy, he's on the field, and he can do something about it.
Yeah, and whatever makes you feel better, it feels like you're servicing your anxiety. I'm happy to be there.
So, Evan, you know, we should go back a little bit and talk about your career from a player perspective, too. And I know Bear has done a lot of research on this from your high school days on up. But take us through a little bit of your, you know, the high school days back when you were, you know, Bear was just saying that, you know, the team, it's escaping me right now. Severn, right?
No, he's at Severn. And that school, you know, Evan, I lived in right across the street from Severna Park High School. And, you know, obviously that neighborhood, you know, you can be 2 seconds away from Severn or Severna Park High School. But certainly just a great complex, a great place to, you know, just a tradition and history. And I was telling Mike, it's just, you know, reading the names of the guys that you played with there. I was like, it's just a very, very interesting school because it's just so low in numbers, but such high level of quality of player. And it's unlike probably any other school in the MIAA. So a little bit about your experience. I mean, you played with Kip, you played with Phipps. I mean, you played with some of the best.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought it up because it kind of runs parallel to the professional journey I've been on. So I grew up in Annapolis, like actually downtown Annapolis proper, and obviously in that area, as Bear, you acknowledged and people know, I mean, lacrosse is just embedded in our culture athletically. So I played every sport, and lacrosse was one of them, and I fell in love with basketball at probably, I don't know, 10 to 12 years old, and my dream was to play, you know, big time college basketball. And I really put a lot of effort into it. So lacrosse was just something I did in the spring because all my best friends played. And this is pre like club intensity. You just played for basically your neighborhood. So for me, it was AYLA, which is, you know, the Annapolis Youth Lacrosse Association, and Michael Phipps, who's now an assistant at Georgetown, you know, All American at Maryland. Brian Phipps is his brother, obviously, who played with Bear. He was my best friend. And, you know, we had a bunch of other guys on our AYLA team. His dad coached Wilson, who played on the Maryland team that won the championship in the 70s. And so that was just what I lived in. But I wasn't like a lax rat kid. I mean, I went to the Final Fours with the Phippses and with my buddy Michael Bios, who ended up playing at Princeton. But for me, it was just I was a competitive tennis player in the summer, played in tournaments. And then in the fall, I played soccer with Phipps and all those guys. And then basketball for me was like always the dream. And I really carried that through into high school when I showed up at Severn. I didn't actually play lacrosse my freshman year. I played soccer in the fall, basketball, and then I committed myself to basketball full time. And I was getting, you know, coaching on the side and all the things that you hear. And it became my life. And I was successful in it, made, you know, varsity as a sophomore. I was getting some looks, and I was eventually recruited relatively, you know, heavily by D3 programs. But by sophomore year, I was like, I'm just going to play lacrosse again for fun. And to Bear's point, Severn was such a, not a factory. It was like the population density, because you had the Annapolis kids that would come up to go to school there if they could. And you had the Severna Park kids. So like Kip Turner, I competed against growing up. And I mean, they were truly like the enemy. It was a true rivalry. And then we all showed up at Severn and became friends. And I think on my senior year, my graduating class, we had, I think, 7 D1 kids. So Kip and Michael Phipps highlighted our class, and then Michael Biles was a Princeton kid who was top. And then there was like kind of a drop off, and then there was me and a kid named Will Dean, and a couple kids went to Villanova and Delaware. And so it was just, I mean, it was everything I could ever ask for. But much like my professional kind of rise, it wasn't necessarily conventional.
Oh, Bear's sleeping. I'll go. See how professional this show is, Evan?
Yeah, well, pregnant pauses add for dramatic effect.
So how did you, if you didn't, I mean, obviously you were a pretty good lacrosse player if you kind of jump in and you you don't play your freshman year and the next thing you know, you're on the field. And let's talk basketball for a second. What was it that really kind of pulled you to the lacrosse side at the end from basketball? I mean, getting some looks and you said you were playing well, and what was it that kind of was the final straw, if you will?
Yeah, I'll never forget. So I was going to, in the summer, I didn't even go to lacrosse camps in the summer. I would go to strictly basketball camps. I was going to like this camp called Five Star. It's like a legendary skills camp. And then it becomes a recruiting camp. I mean, Jordan went there. Everybody goes there. And so that was my first taste of, because I'm playing in the MIA with B League, which is pretty good, but, not great. And I was doing well there. And so that was my first taste. I think it was the summer before my junior year. I was like, man, there is a big gap between where I am and where the guys that are actually going to like mid to high D1 schools are. And so that was kind of, but I wasn't deterred at that point, but I was playing lacrosse at that point. Cause I just, in the spring was like, I missed the game. I missed my friends. And then it was the summer before my senior year. I mean, I was still head down playing basketball. I still went to 205 and I still went to champ camp. And this is again before what is now, and I'm just learning it, how the whole recruiting world works from high school. I mean, how little it matters really would seem where you play high school. It's all about club. And so I benefited in a lacrosse sense from just being at Severn and being on the varsity and being a starting defenseman. So like all the top coaches in the country are coming to our games, especially when we were in the playoffs and stuff. So they see you. And then I go to the two camps that all the coaches are at. And so I ended up getting looks. And I was at another recruiting camp for basketball. And I remember I called my mom. She was kind of running my recruiting stuff. And I said, because I was at that point just getting looks at D3 schools for basketball. And I was getting looks from lacrosse, from Villanova and Lehigh were recruiting me hard, and I was like, I can go to like a big school, and like, I'm not going to be in the NBA. Like, this is, I know where, like, go back to where we started with everything. There's a low floor for me on hoops and not a very high ceiling. And I thought vice versa for lacrosse. So that, and I just made the decision, and I've been pretty good at like, when I just decide to make a pivot, I kind of just go head first. And so from that point on, and then eventually late in the summer, early fall, once I was getting recruited by Villanova and Lehigh were the two main ones, I expressed interest in Delaware, and they kind of came in late because they knew somebody on our staff at Severn. And once I went on a visit there, even the unofficial, I was like, this is it. This is where I want to be. And that's kind of how it got going on the college side of things.
So Evan, you're just jumping in on your Delaware experience, and I will say, other than probably one of the finest mustaches in the game, Coach Shills is the Tom Selleck, obviously, of coaches of mustaches, but just an amazing guy. I know. And we're going to pick your brain about your experience as a player, but I just know as a young college coach, head coach, I think we were at Western Reserve Academy. I'll never forget it. And I'm a younger coach, and he's up there recruiting, of course, at the they had their the Midwest League had their championships, and it used to draw all kinds of coaches before all these massive recruiting tournaments that have popped up. But people actually used to watch high school games.
Yeah.
But him and I sat down, and there's just this whole, you know, pub full of, you know, who's of coaches. And you know, we have dinner, and he doesn't know me really. I mean, he knows me because we're about ready to join the CAA as Robert Morris. But just a long conversation, and I was just, you know, picking his brain about recruiting and this and that. And he was just so generous to hand out knowledge. And I just thought, what a tremendous, you know, community that we're in, where a guy like him with years of institutional knowledge is willing to share, not only willing to share, but share with a guy that's going, you know, that's into conference. So I'm sure he was much like that as a coach too.
Absolutely. And my journey with Shills, affectionately, we call him, or Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, is like kind of a long one. And the thing that, and I almost feel like I've gotten to know him better, which some players will tell you with their college or even pro coaches, at once I left. I mean, his depth of care for his players is, in my opinion, unmatched, but it's not worn on the surface. And so it took a while being at the University of Delaware to truly feel like I had a somewhat of a connection with him, for no other reason than just that's his approach and the reality of he's the head coach. And he was, in my time there, he was in charge of the offense and I played defense. So Grant Carroll, who was the assistant and defensive coordinator, was kind of my guy. I mean, like, he was the one who I dealt with on a daily basis. But the thing that stands out to me about Shills, beyond, to your point, Bear, like, I mean, he's a great lacrosse mind, but the two things are an unreal competitor. Like, that's why I'm a little surprised. Not because he's just a good guy, so I'm sure he's sitting with you to help you out. But, like, he was so competitive, and I've learned more actually from Bill Belichick about the type of athlete he was in high school, because they competed against one another growing up, Belichick at Annapolis and Shills at Severna Park High. And I mean, I look back and like, man, he was an unreal football player, and obviously lacrosse player too, played at UNC. And so there was that, and you could see that. I mean, like, he would get so, even in practice, about stuff. And I know coaches take everything seriously and you guys are all competitors, but I don't know. I would honestly say at times it might have gotten in our way or his way, because his drive was unrelenting. And then secondly is his compassion, because my time at Delaware was a dream, but I had a couple big challenges when it came to injuries. I tore my ACL my sophomore year. I was a redshirt freshman at that point, lined up to start, and it was the preseason, and I tore it. And I ended up getting a staph infection in my knee. So I was out of school. I had to, you know, be in the hospital for a long time. So it was my first taste of like, oh, he's not just the guy that yells at us and makes us run and, you know, is our coach. And so that was the first taste. And then I tore it again. I tore my other knee the last or senior day of my fifth year. And like, I was planning on trying to play pro and do all that stuff. And just the things he said to me, more so what my parents would tell me, because, like, again, he's not the kind of guy that would, like, you know, open up to you on the field or on the phone. I mean, it's just, you know, he is who he is. But I just got a sense of just how much he cared. And then that's just grown as he's followed along with what I'm doing professionally. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, there was a crossover there where he was helping, he was Cottle out with the Bayhawks, and I was calling some of those games, so I'd get to, you know, catch up with him there. And he's an unbelievable coach, obviously a legendary guy, but more importantly, just the kind of person he is.
So I'm always fascinated by the coaching side of things and what players say about him. And it was interesting you said you kind of, I guess, I mean, I'm reading between the lines that you started to appreciate more on, you know, and got a little closer afterwards. And it is typical of players though, right? To get closer to a coach afterwards, because I think, you know, it's kind of business during the time you're with them and you get a taste of them. And obviously if you're there and you're coaching and he's coaching, you like him and so on and so forth. But afterwards, like you hear about the Sabins, right? Those guys who, you know, the kids say that he's a nightmare. He's tough. But then afterwards he becomes this guy that helps him out and kind of walks him through life too. So that's a big part of a coach. Have you ever coached?
Have I? No, no. And it was, it's honestly, it's never been, I think, I don't know. I've never done a deep dive psychologically on it. I think part of it is I'm an only child and I've just kind of been on my own. I mean, my parents were great, super supportive, but I've always kind of just had to, you know, just figure it out. My parents weren't athletes. They weren't into sports. So they were, I was kind of a kid who was like, hey, can you sign me up for this? And they'd be like, absolutely. But you know, we'll just drop you off. And you know, they both worked and I don't know. It was, so, and I don't know why that made me think of it, but I've just never been, I love teams. I miss it in a lot of ways. And a lot of what I do now when we're on site and we're not in the pandemic and we're doing the job the way it's supposed to be done, have a lot of team aspects to it. And I miss that, but it'll be interesting. My son's 5 and my hope is that he has a passion for sports like I did. And my hope is to get into coaching. So maybe that'll change, but I've never really had the desire to be in charge of, you know, a group of, you know, young men or anything like that. Because I just had enough trouble figuring my own stuff out.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, I certainly haven't coached at the level of Bear or some of the coaches we're talking about here, but you know, the coaching part is so, when you bring up what you were saying about Coach Hills, it's one of these things that you go through the process and you don't realize what you're doing. Right. You're coaching. You're just got a passion for whatever you're doing or, you know, some are just helping out or what have you. And then all of a sudden, you know, like it's so funny because a couple days ago I had a player that, you know, ended up playing, you know, played for me at a younger age, went to Mariano at Pace and played with him. And he just out of the blue reached out to me and said, hey, and then we started talking and he said about, you know, he just started bringing up things that affected him in his life and his college career. And I'm sitting there saying, well, this is pretty powerful when you think about it, you know, the whole coaching aspect and what it does to you as a person.
Yeah, it's a responsibility that you hope that everybody takes as seriously as I know like Bear does and the good ones do. And I think back to where you started with Schilling Law, I think you have to be authentic. I mean, that's, so there are coaches that are more open, that probably have better relationships with players that go beyond just the X's and O's and what's happening on the field. I mean, I just was talking to a writer last week about, you know, Kevin Warren, and he was at Delaware with me for a year and had a profound impact on my career. And then I've just followed him and we've stayed in touch. And obviously now I cover his games and I've seen the way he impacts the program and the personalities that he has and the way it works with his players. And, you know, that's just a completely different thing, but that's who he is. So the biggest thing that I think at any level, but especially as you get up into that high school and, you know, college and especially pro, players are going to sniff out, you know, not if you're full of, you know what. So I think that it has to start there.
So let's jump into a little bit of your current career, right? I mean, you've been doing some huge games and sitting there. You pinching yourself on that stuff? I mean, I know you worked hard. We heard that. But, I mean, it's got to be kind of, you know, goosebumpish at times, right, when you're sitting on the sidelines and you got Tom Brady in front of you?
No doubt. my goal, among a lot of things, is to never lose a sense of appreciation for not just how fortunate I am, but how cool this job is. I mean, I still live by the mantra that I'm not working a day, you know, at all. And I'm excited. I mean, right now is a unique time to talk to you guys because I'm pretty much, you know, off for lack of, I got to do some later today to fill in for some other studio host and we do stuff remotely. So I can do that. But for the most part, I mean, I don't have a scheduled event with CBS until, you know, I start doing some training camp reporting. And like when you guys call and I have time, like I enjoy doing, like I don't look at anything I do and, you know, do some stuff with Lack Sports Network this weekend. Like for the most part, I say yes to everything because I just love doing it. And yeah, there's definitely more juice when it's the NFL and it's a big game and I'm in Pittsburgh and Heinz Field's rocking. That level of intensity and the magnitude and the stakes on my end because of how many people are watching and more importantly, how our bosses view it, that scratches the competitive itch that I have had since I was a little kid. But that being said, I loved every minute of doing games in Delaware, Ohio, when you guys didn't have a big crowd there. And it was just, you know, you guys building that thing up and driving in a shitty rental car and, you know, all that stuff. I love that. So the job is even now, I guess, 10 years in, even more exciting than it ever was.
Well, I know that you sit there and you say how you want, you say yes. After this show, you'll probably never do anything like that again.
So, Evan, it's that, you know, when I do see you, and obviously we've chatted several times, I'm like, hey, you know, like I know that guy type thing. And it's like pretty, you know, obviously we're all pretty happy for you in the lacrosse world that you have, you know, had these opportunities. Now, I always wonder though, as you're sitting there, it's like you played, you know, lacrosse at a high level. You did the Bayhawk games and in your hometown, and those are obviously, you know, awesome games. You did, you know, mega games, you know, in pro lacrosse and college lacrosse and things of that nature. But then you go to NCAA basketball tournaments, you're doing Super Bowls, and those are, I mean, they're incredible opportunities. What's your favorite, you know, like if you had to compare, you know, say this is my favorite thing to cover, what has been your favorite sport event to cover?
I would say it's been the divisional rounds. So the way it works for the football season is I'm on a crew. I'm on we're the B crew. So the A crew is Jim Nance, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wolfson. And then we're the B crew. I'm with Ian Eagle and Charles Davis. And every other year, our crew gets a playoff game. It's the way the contracts work. And so your crew is your team. And it's not just the announcers. I mean, like, we're the same. It's the same producer, director, all these people. I'm about, you know, probably 15 deep. And actually, I should go beyond that. I mean, camera operator. We're all the same. So from week one to week 17, it's like a traveling. We all splinter out during the week, and then we descend on a city for that weekend for the game. So you really get to know these people. I've been with this crew. Now, Charles is a new addition because he replaced Dan last year. But I've been with this crew, last year is my seventh year. So you don't really know these people. I mean, Ian Eagle is like a great friend and a mentor. And then, you know, all these. So, and then those years where we get a playoff game, it kind of feels like, you know, there's a comfort with that. But then there's also like, yes, we get, you know, standalone. Like this year we did the Bills Colts game up in Buffalo, first playoff game in forever. Granted, they didn't have a full house, but so I would say, Bear, those are my favorite because of my connection to the people that we do the game with. But it goes hand in hand with then on Super Bowl years, I get to join the A crew for the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. So if I could combine it, I would say the years that we have a playoff game for our crew feel special, but my pinch me moments are the ones. Super Bowls are awesome, and you know what you're a part of, but the championship games are it's a better atmosphere. There's so much because you're in a home venue. I mean, my first one was in Denver when it was Manning and Brady, and Manning won that game. I mean, that was an unbelievable atmosphere. I was at probably my top moment as a broadcaster was the Chiefs Patriots game that went to overtime, and the Patriots won, and I interviewed Brady on the field. He was cussing on live television, which was hilarious. So I mean, like that's the peak, and then the Super Bowl is kind of just the cherry on top. But I would say it kind of goes hand in hand with being in the big game with your crew, because it is a little weird for me. It'd be like, you know, being on the machine and then you guys lose in the playoffs and I go join the Lizards, and, you know, it's not that competitive per se, but it is. I'm not with that group day in and day out.
Yeah, it's interesting that goes. You must see some great stuff on the sidelines too. I just sit there and I'm thinking about you talking about this, and you know, Brady when you're interviewing him cussing and then on TV and everything. I can't imagine what's going on. Any great moments on the sidelines when you're sitting there and you're kind of looking over and saying, I can't believe I'm watching this.
I mean, it's the what really is the I can't believe it is the impact and just how fast these guys are. I mean, I know that the term is often used like, it's like car wrecks. And I'm not trying to be dramatic about the dangers of football. Everybody kind of knows what that is now, especially. But I'm just so impressed by how big these guys are, especially the linemen and linebackers, and just how fast they can move. And then the impacts are, the sound is unbelievable. And then to appease Bear, I would say some of the funnier sideline stuff that I can remember recently was just, you always had to keep an eye on Antonio Brown. Like when he was in his Pittsburgh days, and I was at the game where he was throwing the water cooler across the sideline in Baltimore. And then, you know, he's just, it was like, got to the point where I remember doing like reports where I would say, yes, this visually looks like something of a disruption, but we have to keep in mind this is Antonio Brown, that they've come to expect that these kind of things will happen.
That's great stuff, man. That's great. I know I said earlier about the you know, my wife, that was a compliment, by the way. I love to see you on TV. I think you're a great job.
I know there's a lot more to it and there's a lot of layers to it, but for my sake, and I can speak for myself, you can tell me, I get more comments of, I could say the most meaningful thing, whether it be in a game about a player reporting or something thoughtful. All anyone wants to say is talk about my hair. I get it. I'm good with it. I don't care. You can objectify me or, you know, ridicule me in any way you want. I know where I'm going home to and what I got in my bag, so I'm all good.
That's good.
Evan, so you know, I have never judged you on your hair. Ever. It's never been a thing with me.
That's why I respect you.
I appreciate that. Because So let's dive into the weekend. We got some matchups. We got some matchups here, and it's kind of interesting. I always think of Maryland, you know, for the purest of ACCs are looking at this and saying, yeah, Big Ten, you're really not represented here. But they are, and Maryland is representing the Big Ten. How do you think, like, when I always feel like when I see all these matchups and they come down to this and I look at the selections, I'm like, do you think this is like one of those years where the selection committees, like, they exhale and they say, oh, we got it right. We got it right. Like, there's some great, these are going to be great games.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, I feel like we get chalk at times. I was telling a buddy who's not a big lacrosse guy, like, yeah, I'm doing some stuff this weekend. These are the four teams. And he goes, oh, so it's like every year. I was like, well, yes, but this year for me feels different. And I think it's more product of, like, what the season was. And these were the four teams. And you could throw Notre Dame in the mix that were just seemed a bit above the rest. And the fact that we get to this weekend and know the ones that are going to play it out, yeah, I think feels right. So, yeah, I'm sure the selection committee, when they're thinking, man, we were a couple, successful clears and better time management away from having Loyola and Rutgers in this thing, it feels a lot different, or would feel a lot different.
Do you think they look back and look at the Syracuse pick now and say, maybe we should have went a different route?
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't spent too much time thinking about that, because I just think the seeding, I just didn't microanalyze the seeding this year. I mean, I guess you might understand it better in terms of what could have happened had they gone a different direction there. But for me, it was just kind of like whatever made sense to them, I deferred, because I just know there was other factors involved other than just what we normally have to build this thing out, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. And I mean, you look at, you look from even game to game, you know, Bryant, you're like, all right, here's the NEC champ. And then you throw him in, which Coach Pressler is always prepares his team. They always do a great job, especially in the tournament situations. And they play Virginia to a, 13-11 game. Then you have Georgetown, who just blows the doors off of Syracuse. And then all of a sudden Virginia comes out and says, thanks for coming, Georgetown. Yeah, right. 14-3. Boom. And I'm like, how? I mean, like, it's just crazy. Like, how, you know, but you're dealing with 18 and 22 year old, you know, young men, and anything literally could happen.
It's the case every year, Bear, as you know, but I feel like all those factors are just exacerbated this year because of the uniqueness of the season. I can't explain the Georgetown thing because I was as high on them as anybody, just because I have intimate knowledge of how they're built and had seen them in person, or not in person, but to call one of their games, and it was one of their really bad games. And then I just thought that they were kind of not destined, but set up nicely to make a run. And I think it was a healthy reminder for me, at least, that Virginia, even if they have slog it out with Bryant, they still have just so many incredible, not just lacrosse players, but athletes. And when those things click, as we've seen in years past with that program specifically, they become uber dangerous. And they're honestly, if you had to, I think making a pick right now is, whatever at this point. You're truly just throwing stuff against the wall, but I oddly feel the best about Virginia heading into this weekend.
Yeah, I think, obviously the top four, the four teams, Carolina, Maryland, Duke, and Virginia, throughout the season were the high scorers, per game, per team. But let's talk individual players for a second, because I agree with you. I think any one of these teams can walk away with it. I look at them and I'm saying, North Carolina Virginia matchup to me is just, a flip a coin here. I don't know where it goes, and then you get the Maryland Duke and you're in the same place. So, but let's talk players. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on how the Twarton Award is given away, because, you always hear, well, it's the guy that's going deepest into the tournament kind of thing, and the guy that's really working his team. I look at a Jared Bernhardt right now, and I find that hard to believe. Best player in lacrosse, arguably. And then you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, Sowers. If Sowers wins, is he getting the Twarton in your mind, or is Jared still get it?
I think in this year, Jared's getting it, in my opinion, no matter what happens this weekend. And honestly, I would hope he would have gotten it no matter what happened at Notre Dame. They lose that game in overtime. I think that the championship weekend, and I'm not a voter and I haven't spent too much time on it, because it's not part of my deal, but it would seem to me that championship weekend and the tournament more so becomes the tiebreaker. If there's really, a tight race, yeah, and more so championship, then it becomes like, okay, like, well, let's use that as a way to separate. So specific to this year, I don't think that becomes, I think Jared's done enough, three times over to get that, that hardware.
I want to dive into your thoughts on site, both of you guys, really. Mike, you're up in Connecticut. I just when they announced the site, I kind of, it was a little bit of a head scratcher. And you're picking a school. Now, I remember a time, and Evan and Mike, you guys probably remember as well, when they used to play in, college stadiums, like watching a national championship in Bird Stadium, I still love them watching the old games, when they're at Cornell and all these college, and then they went to the NFL stadiums, which at the time I thought the growth of the fans, it made sense. And then, the cost of the tickets and the quality of the TV programming, I think the numbers started taking a little bit of a hit, and now they're back in a college stadium. But the choice of, going to, a school that doesn't necessarily sponsor, men's lacrosse, and what's your guys, and it's grass, it's going to be raining. So many thoughts on it for me. Like, I'm indifferent. I'm like, well, is this good, bad? What, I don't even know what the attendance looks like yet. It'll be interesting to see. Evan, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm sure you could make the argument for it. And I hope that the NCAA made this decision with factors that help grow the game. And so all that being said, I the whole system to me is a complete, I don't know if it's a joke. I respect everyone's job and what they have to do. I'm just a strong believer in it should be in Annapolis at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. I know it's graduation weekend and all those things, but to me, it's a venue that is perfect for the event, and it would keep people out. Tickets would actually be a commodity and something you have to do ahead of time. And then the urgency and demand would be there. The days of people thinking it's a unique anomaly to go to an NFL stadium or make a trip to Hartford, to me, are out the window. So that's just kind of where I come down on it. They could have it anywhere, and I would always, my answer would be find a way to have it in Annapolis, because the best college games visually have been played in that stadium for my money.
You know, it's interesting, you know, I being from Connecticut, I get the location, right? You're not too far from Boston. You're not too far from, you know, New York. You're not too far from these hotbeds. I mean, Maryland a little farther, obviously, but you know, I'm a little confused by it myself, actually, when I heard it was, you know, going to be at UConn in Rensselaer Field. I've been at that stadium. You know, I've been there for lacrosse games. I've been there for football games. It's not big, but I don't know. Is it? And I don't know the thought process behind it. Is it growing the game? And, you know, Evan, you had mentioned that, you know, getting the game out there, growing it more. Is that part of the process? I don't know that you're growing it necessarily. It's a fairly, you know, Connecticut's still pretty lacrosse savvy at the moment. I mean, it's not like it's a barren spot, but I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you, Evan, that it should be down there. I've never been, so that's why I don't agree. So I guess that's where I kind of fall down. But to Bear's point, in the bigger stadiums, is it something that maybe they're concerned about attendance with everything going on and the COVID? And maybe it was
be.
Maybe it was just a they should be.
They
you're
should
right.
Be concerned about attendance in a non-pandemic year. I mean, the attendance is bad. It's not good.
Yep.
You know, and the NFL stadiums look empty, and you know they relatively are empty, and that's my point. I mean, maybe I don't know what the Hartford, you know, the UConn stadium is, but it's 20K, and that's kind of what you're getting. And you get a little over 20K, and then you have people that can't get in, and it's full. Look, I mean, these are all things that I know you guys have talked about because you care about the sport and things like that. It's, you know, to me, kind of just doing the same thing over and over again.
Why do you think, though?
Come on, everybody, Mike, you live up there. Everyone goes to East Hartford on Memorial Day weekend, game or not, right? I mean, it's a destination.
It's a hot spot. I mean, it is a hot spot. You're right.
Oh, geez. I don't know about that decision either. I'm just like, wow. You know, like I just, you know, there's so many cool lacrosse stadiums, you know, that they could have. I agree, Evan. I mean, you know, obviously we've played the Bayhawks and even before I was coaching in the MLL, I'd go watch the Bayhawks at Navy Marine Corps Stadium. And it was awesome. You know, like I'm like, this is just a great place. And I'd always get excited, you know, about going to go play the Bayhawks, you know, with my time with the Machine, because it's just such a cool stadium and such a great town. And obviously, I formerly lived right down the street from there, and just a really cool venue. And I'm pretty sure we had a winning record against them there, but I'll just say that. But anyways,
and Evan, I guess, you know, Evan, you said something, and I agree. It's like, you know, lacrosse in general just doesn't put butts in seats. Why do you think that is? I just get so, you know, the sport is growing. You got a lot of people that, you know, love the sport. And yeah, okay, it's not football. I get it. But there seems to be enough people involved in this sport to support it, no? It just seems odd that we're not getting people in these venues or seats or, you know, in the numbers that you expect.
Well, I think it all starts with what are the numbers you expect. If you're expecting what we had in 07 when we made our run to the Final Four, and I think the weekend or the Saturday total was like 70, it's not going to happen. The world's different. And it's not an indictment on the sport or the fans themselves, but people just have different priorities. I mean, you look at anything, whether it's TV ratings, they're not what they were when, you know, I was watching the Friends reunion last night. Like 52 million people watched the last episode of Friends. Like, that's not happening anymore. So you just start there. Like, if your goal is to try and recapture some past success, then I think you're wasting your time. I just live by the idea that you have to make it something that has any level of urgency. Like Champ Weekend's a walk-up event now. So the weather's going to be ugly in East Hartford or wherever that stadium is. Like, that's going to hurt. But if you're playing in a place, if you bought the ticket because you had to buy the ticket ahead of time to make sure that you could get in because you want to see the game, then you're going to go, whether it's raining or whether it's cold or whether it's sunny, you know, too hot. It's just like, that's to me, it's all about, so recalibrate expectations to the point where there's urgency and it becomes and people like being at events that are packed. I mean, you know, Barry, you bring up the Bayhawk games. I mean, I agree, it's a great stadium, but there was never packed. And if you go to a game at Marine Corps Memorial, I mean, I'll never forget the first one I went to. It was Hopkins Navy, I think it was 03, 02. I mean, it was full stadium. And it's just unbelievable. And so that to me is just, you start there. You kind of, you know, totally scrap any previous plans. I know there's realities of budgets and trying to achieve some sort of, you know, financial success with it. But just, you know, get back to, okay, what's the amount that we could bring in, know they're going to show up? And then what's a venue that is desirable and a desirable location that would be filled? And then you start there. And then when people are watching on TV, as great as the TV product is, they're like, man, that place is rocking. That looks fun. And I want to go experience it. So that's kind of my view of it. Also understanding that I don't know the mechanics of every aspect of this.
No, you're right, and I you're totally right, and I still feel like it's, you know, I was in the front office ticketing aspects of the machine, and you know, the way we looked at it is people only have such a certain budget for lacrosse, and not only that, but people only have a certain budget for summer anything, and what are they going to spend it on, you know, and that's the reality of the situation. And then you look at lacrosse in general, it's like, how does, you know, how do manufacturers, if how do they go out of business? How does, it's just an interesting sport to me in general. Like, we have huge camps like Top Star and Top 205 that used to draw a billion kids. And then you see the club scene come on, they go away. You see huge manufacturers go away. You see, all kinds of just very interesting, for the richest sport, the people with the most money involved, it seems like the hardest sport to be successful financially or build a ticket for.
But I think,
well, I also think there, and you could speak to this probably more because, again, you live and breathe this thing and you've been on all sides of it. I think that, you know, I go back to 07 and that time, and really when I was in college, so like 03 to 08, there was such a boom and there was a lot of success that I think it created unrealistic expectations. Mm. And you see this in business and in life in general. When you get a taste of like, man, it could be this good, and then you forecast it out and it's like, man, we're going to be like the MLS in 10 years, then that's all anyone can think about. So they lose sight of, I mean, what it was like when we went to Bird Stadium or the Final Four is at Rutgers. Nobody was complaining about, oh man, it's, you know, we need to get here, we need to get there. Like, that's kind of my view of it. And I do benefit from the fact that I don't, like, lacrosse is something I love and I care about. And I'm still involved with when it comes to calling games and, you know, talking to people who are coaches who I, you know, again, consider friends, but it doesn't pay my mortgage. So I have a different view of it. And I just think that a complete recalibration of expectations on all levels, from, you know, the high school to college and the pro level, would behoove people, because then the frustration, the disappointment, and then what ends up being the judgment of everybody else, oh, they're doing it wrong, they're doing it wrong, oh, yeah, we're going to do it right. It's like, the community is so small, if we're going to splinter off and just judge everybody because no one's getting to the desired end, line, then it's just, again, it's a waste of time.
Evan, we're back at a grass stadium. I know back in the, you know, before I coached at Wheeling Jesuit, where I was on the Division II committees and all that, and it used to be a very interesting process because of the grass stadiums. They would, Division II would play their championship like at some parking lot around the corner somewhere. You know, you'd watch New York Tech and CW Post play on a practice field somewhere on, over the weekend because of the fears of what might happen to the grass field if D2 guys played on it. So it's been very interesting, but I think the Division II has gotten some more respect since then, and I've always loved that aspect. I think that was you know, the Division III's and the Division II's alongside. And we have Salisbury and RIT, so a little bit of a north-south, you know, feel there. And also the same with Lemoyne and Lenoir Ryan, which is new on the scene. And Coach Paradine doing an excellent job of getting them on the mix. Just touching on that real quick, we know you got to we gotta roll out here, but I always love giving those Division II and Division III shout-outs because I coached at those levels, and they work very hard, and it is part of the package of the weekend.
No doubt, and I'm glad you brought it up. And there was a time before I was calling games at CBS, I think at that point they were called College Sports, and now Sports Network, where we would do those games, and now NCAA.com does them and streams them. I wish we were able to do them. I mean, I've been there for them and covered them when I was doing local TV here in Baltimore and Salisbury was playing. The quality of the play is equal to the D1 games, and just the appreciation for the moment from those players and those programs is through the roof. So I think it's a day that the Sunday should be celebrated more than it even is. And I know that's easy for me to say because I don't have to put the money up to put it on national TV or whatever it might be. But I those games are nuts, and they're again, they usually have some of the better finishes of the weekend.
I'm sorry, I was talking to myself, I guess. Again, Evan, you see how professional this broadcast is. So, you know, I want to go back
to something. Mute.
I want to go back to something you said about the recalibration of expectations, because I think you're right on the mark there. I think what's happened is it's just blown up, and everyone expected it to take off, and it's doing its thing, right? It's a sport that's kind of moving along and doing its thing, and the expectations are so much higher. But do you think at the end of the day that this is, you know, we always talk about what it could be. Do you think this is, you know, at the real professional ranks caliber, and do you think it's going to be in our time?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I think we're going to get the best view of it, and thanks to what, you know, Paul and his brother and the PLL are doing, I think they're giving it the best shot it's ever had, and I know the amount of money and time and energy they've invested, or people have invested in it, and so, and hopefully, from what I understand, I mean, they're going to get some time to truly test this thing out, so I think it's a TBD on that.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to trend more towards it just being a great sport for those that play it and those that enjoy it. And it's a great college sport that'll, I think, always be on some form of TV because it'll be attached to the contracts for basketball and football. I know that's, you know, one of the ways it gets on TV now. So I think that'll always exist, and more kids will play it. The one theory I've always lived by a little bit that I think has some, you know, maybe some weight to it, is to use that soccer comparison. One of the things that's helped the MLS is that the people that are buying tickets now and going to games and bringing, you know, they're the kids like me who grew up playing soccer. Soccer was not big for my parents' generation, or even the one, you know, they're older. So there's a version of events where the kids that are obsessed with lacrosse right now, that are, you know, teens and the club scene and love it, and grew up with more access to it because it's on more platforms. When they're parents, then they'll be going to games. But I just think that's a stretch too, and it requires a lot of patience. So I don't know the answer to that. Up to this point, it hasn't proven to be as I guess, successful, however you deem that, I guess, financially, or, you know, getting past the markets that already enjoyed it than people expected, which again, I think is part of the problem. Expectations got out of whack.
Yeah.
But man, I hope so. Cause, but I'm also good. But again, it's easy for me to say, but I'm okay with, again, my son's 5 and I want him to play lacrosse, and I'm excited for him to, play youth if he wants to, and if he wants to keep going to play high school and college, that's all that matters to me, at least.
Yeah. I guess it's one of those things, right? You put so much pressure on this and you keep focusing, and for us, it's something to talk about, but the reality is, this all has to happen somewhat organically and just kind of move forward. And I think maybe, we always want it to blow up because here we are, we're invested in the sport and we do things. But I think the reality is that it's just going to do what it does.
And I would say for your guys, it's like the people that care about what you do are going to always be there. I mean, that's what's so cool about the sport too. And I think we ignore at times, and I know there's aspects to the, the stereotypes and the history, and some of it's ugly and not good. And I'm glad that it's grown in a lot of ways, but I'm also don't ignore the stuff that got us here, and don't ignore some of the things that made it what it was and is. And so that I love thinking back to, old school bucket helmets and stuff like that. And that to me is what attracted me to the sport, and being from an area where it was so embedded. And I don't know. So those things are okay.
So Evan, we know we're up against the hour here. And now that you've triggered my, one of the names that was on my Danny McGrath list, you know who Danny McGrath is?
I don't. Should I?
Okay. Well, probably not. So Danny McGrath was Steve Buscemi's, that was the role he had in Billy Madison. The list,
oh, okay,
the guy with the lipstick.
Yeah, yeah.
He makes the list of all the people he wants to kill.
Uh-huh.
So you triggered a name, and it was an old friend of mine. It was Greg Carroll. And I'm going to tell you how he ended up on my Danny McGrath, and you lived this experience. You lived it. So we were going to schedule Delaware, and of course Mike loves these Robert Morris stories.
Here we go.
And he's like, come on down to Delaware, which is a bus ride for Robert Morris. He's like, and you know what? We have to play this game at 7 o'clock at night. I was like, you do know what that means? We're staying for 2 nights, and we're going to get killed. And this is going to be horrible. He's like, no. He's like, you got to do it. I was like, no, we got to play a 1 o'clock game so we can get home. No, you got to do it. So, of course, it's your youth night. He's like, yeah, because all kinds of kids come there. We show up. I think 10 kids showed up for youth night. You guys pound the snot out of us, like 20 to a billion.
What year is it?
Oh, God. Like, pick a year. I don't remember. It was a night game. And I remember we just watched the draft at the hotel the whole day because we just had nothing to do all day. It was probably like, I don't know, pick one. You guys beat us 19-3 in 2005-6 at your place. Yeah, then you beat us 20-5 in 2007-08. I mean, beat us in Pittsburgh in 2006-07, like 19-4. So I used to love Greg. Like on the road, we'd hang out, go out, and all that. And then after that, he did write me an apology email after. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, that was terrible. It's like, so I did hit him up. I was like, so we stayed to play 7 o'clock at night for youth night. I'm pretty sure I counted 15 kids in the stands. I was like, I hope those 15 kids really enjoyed this 19-3 pounding. So that spurred our. I was like, before I leave, we have to beat Delaware. Unfortunately, before we got LCA, it was 12-10, our last outing against Delaware. But hey, closing the gap from 20-5 to 12-10, I was semi happy with that. But what fun! I do like Greg. He did a great job there. He's worked hard, and was awesome.
It makes sense. I mean, his greatest strength. I mean, I thought he was a good ace and nose coach, but man, he could sell. And last I checked, he's now in finance. And wealth management. So he got back to his true gifts, and I hope he's doing well. I randomly would see him. He had seats at Eagles games, and when I'd be roaming the sidelines, he'd scream down to me and text me, and so that was funny. But yeah, Carroll could sell it. So he sold you, or somehow got you.
Oh, he did. I'll take him off the list, though. I'll take him off the list. Yeah. I'll scratch him off.
He's horrible.
Well, Evan.
Well, thanks, Evan. Thanks for jumping in with us. It was fun, and no enjoy problem, your man. Holiday weekend.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Evan. Yeah, we really appreciate
enjoy
it.
Enjoy the games. Absolutely.
All right, man. Later. Take it easy. Bye. So we had a real true broadcaster to make us look like real schlubs here. And I just want to, you sold him a bill of goods. You said that we have 12, 11, sometimes 12 listening to us. You know, you can't overinflate our numbers just to get guests on. That's going to be a problem.
Well, you know, you know what's crazy is his voice is like, he could be a radio guy too. Like, he doesn't have the face for radio, but he definitely has a voice. And unfortunately, his connection was not as strong as we would have liked, because I enjoy, you know, listening to him do games, and I think he's excellent. His insight is awesome. It does help. Obviously, he played the game, but I think he does the same thing for other sports. Yeah, like I feel like he's does his homework.
Well, you know what it is. He's, you know, being a former athlete and being in that role, you kind of you relate to a lot that's going on, you know. And I think he kind of brings that out. At least that's my take on him no matter what he's doing, he brings it out and you feel it. You know, it's not so much just the words, but you feel it. You feel that he's telling you from experience. So, good guy. I like Evan, man. I like Evan. And I didn't mean that he was just there because he had a, you know, good hair. He's a talented, but he's a smart guy too. You know, you sit there and you chat with him.
I have a funny Evan story.
He's off now. You're gonna hammer that.
Yeah, I can talk about it a little bit. I can talk about it a little bit. You know, like as coaches in the MLL, you got to go back and you watch the game films, and I'm watching a game film of us playing against the Bayhawks. And, I don't know what was going on, but at this time I think, Quint was obviously some level frustrated with the MLL. And there was a time where his remarks, during a couple years there were little side remarks were very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and the stats were wrong, so he would, you know, get upset about certain things. So he started crediting Joe Keegan a lot and stuff like that about actually having legitimate stats for the MLL and just things, yeah, you know, like that. But it was funny. But one of our games, he's talking about three or four of our middies, and Quint just starts, he creates a new position. It's called a tranny. He's like, he's a tranny. And I'm just like, I'm watching this. I have to text Evan. I'm like, at what point is he calling guys tranny that you just like give him the elbow and say, that's no. And you know what he's doing, right? You know, it's like, nope, you can't. No, that's not a thing. You know, you can't. There are people actually listening. It might be 10, might be 5 watching the game, but tranny is not a position. So it was just funny. I was like, yeah, he's like, he's a little off the rails right now. So all good stuff though.
Well, who do you got? Like let's finish up. It was great. Great. Let's finish up with your prediction. Who do you think you got this weekend? Who's going to be there Monday?
Oh man. I tell you what, I know, well, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, be around these coaches and know these guys. And man, that is just the crazy thing about all four of the coaches. And obviously for good reasons. I mean, they just continue to find ways to get better every day. And you know, that's what's crazy. They've all won recent championships. It's not like there's anybody in this group that's like, ah man, none of my kids have been here, we don't know what we're doing now. No, they all know what they're doing now, and they all are excellent at coaching their guys all the way up to the last minute of the last game they play. And I think that is what makes it so hard about this Final Four particularly. And I really don't. I usually every year I have a team and I'm like, yeah, they're gonna win it. But then I would have said Virginia, no chance. Yeah, especially when you look at a 13-11, you know, game. I'm like, But then they blow the doors off of Georgetown. You're like, whoa. Yeah. Okay, I guess they're back in it. They're back in it. I don't know. I'm just hoping, you know what I'm hoping for, Mike? I'm hoping for just great games.
So you're not going to see some you're not going to pick a team here. You're going to shoot this down saying, you know, all four teams are good. Really? You're not picking one? I'm going to pick Duke. See, I went out on a limb.
You're picking Duke?
I'm picking Duke.
Well, if you're going to pick Duke, I got to pick someone from the other side. Man, I say if Carolina makes it past Virginia, I'm going to take Carolina.
All right. So I got Duke, you got Carolina.
Back for the championship.
It'll be a Maryland-Virginia final. We'll both be wrong.
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. No question. We all know that's going to happen. I mean, what's your D2? Let's get your D2, D3, and then we're out of here.
D3, I would go with RIT. I think they're playing.
Oh.
Yeah, they're playing. I mean, I saw part of – I don't get to see them all. I saw part of one game, and they just seem to be a pretty talented bunch there. So I'm going to go with them. And I'm going to go with Lemoyne only because I had a friend that went to Lemoyne. So I don't know.
Oh, so you're just going all.
Yeah,
all
I don't know much about it. I just keeping it upstate. Let's you know me. I'm a Syracuse guy, so I just kind of keep it upstate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Just keep it up in that area. Well, the scary thing about RIT is their scoring is very spread out. So it's not like you just shut down one guy. They just beat Tufts, who I hammered people this year.
Yeah.
Hammered. And, RT, no one's really touched them, huh? Man, I might have to agree with you, but it's just hard to count Berkman and the boys out on a Sunday, on Memorial Day weekend. Really hard to count those guys out. They figure out ways to win.
Listen.
But I'm going to go RIT as well. I'm going to say RIT, and we both know Salisbury's winning that game.
Right. Whoever we pick, it's going to be the other one. So if you're wagering on the game, just listen closely.
Right. And then I'm rooting for Lenore Ryan. I'm going to go Lenore Ryan. I'd love to see a little change up in D2. I think Coach Paradine's done a great job. Let's just see if we can get a new champ.
They're scoring up a storm, though. That's been all year long.
Yeah.
So
fun
right.
stuff. Great
well, there
weekend.
We go. We've solved all the issues that need to be solved this weekend. Have a good long weekend.
Yes, sir.
Man.
You too, my brother. We'll see you next Friday.
All right. And that is the Second Cup of Coffee.